We are starting into the 32nd chapter of the book of Ezekiel, and we're still in this long, long session of these various prophecies against Egypt. And as we've noted, Egypt has had an incredible influence on the Jews, the chosen people, and most of it's been negative. Most of it has been negative. There's been some that was positive at the time of Joseph, when Joseph went there and then brought his family after he had risen up to become prime minister. And during Joseph's lifetime, and for some period of time, which is not clear, and the Bible text doesn't speak of that, they were living in Egypt in favor, with a favorable situation by the Pharaoh. After about 400 years or sometime during that period, they fell out of favor. And there was so many of them that the Pharaoh of the Exodus, Thutmose II, he tried to persecute them. He tried to inflict an infanticide. He tried to kill all the male babies. And the midwives, Pua and Shua, they wouldn't do it, and neither would the others. And the persecutions continued, and they persecuted them terribly. But the bigger issue was how they influenced them. During that time, they influenced the Jews who had seen God, who had met with God, who knew that they were led there. And what they did was they started getting paganized into the culture of the Egyptian. So that would began the problem. And then there's a whole host of other ones after that. So this prophecy against Egypt is one that discusses the entire chronology of the Jews' relationship to Egypt, starting way, way back before the Exodus, during that 400-year period. We've learned some things in this book about the idolatry the Jews engaged in during that period because of the Egyptian influence. Well, what we're looking at today as we enter the 32nd chapter is the sixth prophecy against Egypt of the seven, and we'll finish next week, the last of them, and then move on in this book. But there's a reason that God has given us this amount of information here. Whenever there's a lot of information about a particular subject in the Bible, it bears close scrutiny because God has something important to say, and there's a lot for us to learn in these passages. So with that, I'm going to read Ezekiel 32, the first half of the chapter, the first to the 16th verse. And it came to pass in the 12th year, in the 12th month, in the first day of the month, that the word of Jehovah came unto me, saying, Son of man, take up a lamentation over Pharaoh, king of Egypt, and say unto him, Thou wast likened unto a young lion of the nations, yet art thou as a monster in the seas, and thou didst break forth with thy rivers, and troublest the waters with thy feet, and foulest their rivers. Thus saith the Lord Jehovah, I will spread out my net upon thee in a company of many peoples, and they shall bring thee up in the net, and I will lead thee upon the land. I will cast thee forth upon the open field, and I will cause all the birds of the heavens to settle upon thee, and I will satisfy the beasts of the whole earth with thee, and I will lay thy flesh upon the mountains, and fill the valleys with thy height. I will also water with thy blood the land wherein thou swimmest, even to the mountains, and the watercourses shall be full of thee. And when I shall extinguish thee, I will cover the heavens and make the stars thereof dark. I will cover the sun with a cloud, and the moon shall not give its light. All the bright lights of heaven will I make dark over thee, and set darkness upon thy land, saith the Lord Jehovah. I will also vex the hearts of many peoples when I shall bring thy destruction among the nations into the countries which thou hast not known. Yea, I will make many peoples amazed at thee, and their kings shall be horribly afraid for thee, when I shall brandish my sword before them, and they shall tremble at every moment, every man for his own life, in the day of thy fall. For thus saith the Lord Jehovah, the sword of the king of Babylon shall come upon thee. By the swords of the mighty will I cause thy multitude to fall. The terrible of the nations are they all. And they shall bring to naught the pride of Egypt. And all the multitude thereof shall be destroyed. I will destroy also the beast thereof from beside many waters. Neither shall the foot of man trouble them any more, nor the hoofs of beasts trouble them. Then will I make their waters clear and cause their rivers to run like oil, saith the Lord Jehovah. When I shall make the land of Egypt desolate and waste, a land destitute of that whereof it was full, when I shall smite all them that dwell therein, then shall they know that I am Jehovah. This is the lamentation wherewith they shall lament. The daughters of the nations shall lament therewith over Egypt, and over all her multitude shall they lament therewith, saith the Lord Jehovah. Now this is prophecy 6 of the total 7, and the remaining part of chapter 32 will be the last prophecy towards Egypt, and it kind of sums this up. What we see is a lot of repetition here, but additional details are added. So it's interesting to see how God does this. He keeps saying similar things over and over again, but he's referring to different times on the long chronology of all world history. So this section here is discussing the final judgment on Pharaoh. And Pharaoh is used here in a couple of different ways. It's used to refer to the specific Pharaoh, Hophra, but also the king of Egypt, whoever that will and may be. The last actual Pharaoh, I think he ended his reign in the mid-1950s, and that was Farouk. They've been called kings and presidents since then. But let's just look at the first couple verses here and take a look at what they say. And it came to pass in the 12th year, in the 12th month, in the first day of the month, that the word of Jehovah came unto me, saying, Son of man, take up a lamentation over Pharaoh, king of Egypt, and say unto him, Thou wast likened unto a young lion of the nations, yet art thou as a monster in the seas, and thou didst break forth with thy rivers, and troublest thy waters with thy feet, and fouledest their rivers. So this prophecy here, because these things are so well dated, and it's one of the things that really causes us to look at the scriptures closely, because these things aren't just casually thrown out. They're given specific dates and locations and times and so on. This was about 18 months after the fall of Jerusalem, and that was in 586 B.C. So the 12th year in the 12th month in the first day of the month turns out on the Gregorian calendar, which is what we use today, it's March the 3rd, 585 B.C., and this was about 2 months after the fall of Jerusalem had been discussed, because somebody came to tell them that Jerusalem had fallen. Also, the last group of the captives came too. So they knew, Ezekiel must have heard about this. He knew it was going to happen. And then he heard from somebody that this actually had happened, and he finds out about it a few months later. But here's God saying to him, I want you to take up a funeral dirge. That's what this lamentation is, a funeral dirge. And a funeral dirge in the Bible is something where people are wailing and crying and having a lot of pain over a particular event. Now, this is the second to the last one here. And And the Pharaoh, king of Egypt, the Lord tells Hophra, he says, you were like a lion to the nations around you. They just looked at you as invincible. And he also brings in, we've seen this before, but he brings this in a little different way, this sea monster. Well, the Hebrew word is tanim, and it's a crocodile, basically. And he's referring to this as a crocodile. Well, that's the Hebrew word for crocodile today, a tanim. And it says, you were in the water. This was in the water. He said, people are saying you're like a lion, but you're not like a lion. You're more like a crocodile. And he uses this in the 29th chapter, too, because he's now going to go on to describe a crocodile and what they do. A crocodile is not a bold animal that's out in the open and saying, come on and get me. I'll take on anybody. No, he hides underneath the water. And it's like he slithers off the bank, on into the river, and he waits for his prey. He's got this element of surprise that he brings out. And what he's saying here, God is saying, he says, you're just like a crocodile. You're hiding out, and then you're going out and attacking these other places and then coming back. That's like what the crocodile does. The crocodile comes out of the river, attacks something, and then goes right back into hiding. So that's his strategy. And he's saying, you're no lion. You're no bold lion. You're a crocodile. You're just like these things that slither on the banks of the Nile and the tributaries and the Delta. Then he says, you trouble the waters with your feet and you foul the rivers. And he's using this imagery to say, you're going into these other countries and attacking them and causing problems. And you're not, because if we think back to some of the early prophecies, he was supposed to be helping other nations, but he didn't do it. He promised the Jews he was going to help them against the Babylonians, against the Assyrians. He didn't do it. He didn't do it. Which is indicative of the nature of a crocodile. And they're the way that they capture their prey and the way that they go back into hiding. But God says, I'm going to trap you. I'm going to trap you in a net, and you're not going to like it. So the text moves on, and the next three verses say, thus saith the Lord Jehovah, I will spread out my net upon thee with a company of many peoples, and they shall bring thee up in the net, and I will leave thee upon the land, and I will cast thee forth upon the open field, and will cause all the birds of the heavens to settle upon thee, and I will satisfy the beasts of the whole earth with thee. And I will lay thy flesh upon the mountains and fill the valleys with thy height. I will also water with thy blood the land wherein thou swimmest, even to the mountains, and the watercourses shall be full of thee. So this is interesting. He's going to pull Pharaoh from his secret spot, like the crocodile, going to pull you out of the water. I'm going to put you on dry land. Everybody's going to see you. I'm pulling you out of your secret hiding place. So you're not going to be able to surprise anybody anymore, Pharaoh. I'm going to reveal who you are and what you do. And once out of the water, and not having that protection, that cover, if you will, he's going to be like the classic fish out of water syndrome. You know, he's going to be someplace where he's not used to, someplace he can't thrive, someplace he's vulnerable, and he's going to be powerless to attack any other nations, because he will now be the prey. He will now be the one that's vulnerable when God does this to him. And the company of many peoples is going to refer to the Babylonians that he's leading in to do this. To do this, God wants Babylon, led by Nebuchadnezzar, to come in and destroy Hophra. That's what he's doing here. What's really interesting here, the Hebrew word for net is cherem. And it's the same root letters, but slightly different vowels for haram. Haram. And this is one of the Hebrew plays on words. Because Hebrew does this throughout the whole Bible. I remember asking one of my Hebrew teachers, well, is there a book that talks about all these plays on words so I could see them? He says, yeah, it's called the Bible. It's filled with them. There's hundreds of these things there. And it gives us insight that we don't get in English. So, yes, he's putting a net over him. But the net, through this play on words, is a destructive net. It mutilates. It's not just trapping and capturing. It's mutilating him. So the Hebrew play on words here is talking about bringing destruction or mutilation on the army and Pharaoh. And this gets borne out in the subsequent passages because it talks about what ends up happening to the army after the net, if you will, this mutilating or destroying net is cast on them. God says, I will cause all the birds of the heavens to settle upon thee, and I will satisfy the beast of the whole earth with thee. In other words, the corpses of the army are going to lie out in the open where the animals and the birds are going to feed on them. So God is saying, no, you're going to get destroyed, Pharaoh, because of what you've done. Because of what you've done. And I would chance to say, Pharaoh has no idea why. He's just doing what Pharaoh does. He's doing what he thinks he should do because he's led by the person who runs a lot of what takes place in this world, Satan. He's polluted this world. And it's no different back then. No different back then. Today, these nations are doing the same things the Egyptians did. They're defying God. They're bringing actions against God and others. There's a special hatred for the Jews and the Christians. And it gets borne out in the actions here that we see in these Old Testament prophecies about what these people were doing in light of who the Jews were, the chosen people at that time. Satan is the source of all these efforts. Apostle Paul tells us in the sixth chapter of Ephesians that we don't wrestle with flesh and blood. It's a spiritual battle, wickedness in high places that we have to be aware of. Because that's the source. The source is not somebody that wants to fight with us or persecute us. It's who's driving them to do it. Where those ideas come from. And Satan is going to continue to do this until he is finally defeated. Now, the same sort of things are going to happen here at the end of the tribulation. Jesus predicted these things are going to happen. Jesus made it real, real clear in Matthew 24:28 that wherever the carcasses are, there you'll find the vultures. There you find the vultures. And the same thing is happening or will happen in the end of the Revelation. Look at Revelation 19, verses 17 to 18. And I saw an angel standing in the sun, and he cried with a loud voice, saying to all the fowls that fly in the midst of heaven, come and gather yourselves together unto the supper of the great God, and that ye may eat the flesh of kings and the flesh of captains and the flesh of mighty men and the flesh of horses and of them that sit on them and the flesh of all men, both free and bond, both small and great. This is what happens to the ungodly that have come against the people of God. We don't see this happening now. We see little persecutions here and there. And if you look over in the Middle East, with the rise of Islamic fundamentalism, and you see this group called ISIS, I mean, they're torturing Jews and Christians. Anybody that won't convert, they torture them. They behead them. All of this will come to an end because God will only let this go on for so long, and he will take his corrections, just like he's doing here. Just like he's doing here. Now, here he's showing these Egyptian soldiers they're on these mountains, and there's, I look at this a couple of different ways. It's one of the two. It's either they fled there and they've been killed, and then the birds come and the vultures and so on and the beast, or the birds are eating them and carrying the meat up there. One of the two, because they end up on mountains and valleys, and these corpses are just all over the place. And he says that the Nile is going to be filled with the blood of all these corpses. Filled with the blood of all these corpses. This is bringing a similar judgment on Hophra as he did with Thutmose II. That was the Pharaoh of the Exodus. Just prior to the Exodus, the Jews were led out out of Egypt under Moses, and there were a series of plagues. One of those was the plague of the blood in all the waterways. They couldn't drink any of the water. God achieves his ends through these huge supernatural efforts. Huge things. Well, let's move on here. This next section talks about blacking out the world. And there's a lot of blackouts mentioned in the Bible, and this is one of them. Now, verses 7 to 10 in chapter 32 state, "And when I shall extinguish thee," he's talking to the Pharaoh, "I will cover the heavens and make the stars thereof dark. I will cover the sun with a cloud, and the moon shall not give its light. All the bright lights of heaven will I make dark over thee, and set darkness upon thy land, saith the Lord Jehovah. I will also vex the hearts of many people, and I shall bring thy destruction among the nations, into the countries which thou hast not known. Yea, I will make many peoples amazed at thee, and their kings shall be horribly afraid for thee, when I shall brandish my sword before them. And they shall tremble at every moment, every man for his own life in the day of thy fall." So now he's talking about completely extinguishing the light, if you will, or Pharaoh's life. Now his light's going out. You know, you hear people say, "I'm going to punch your lights out." Well, it's a reference to taking you out completely. You're not going to have any light. You know, your life is gone. And the God says, "I'm going to bring a blackout over the land of Egypt, and the people are going to fear and tremble at this." A complete blackout is fearful. It is very, very fearful. It had a profound effect on Egypt when the Exodus took place in 1445 B.C. God blacked out Egypt. Now, darkness is one way for God to bring a lot of consternation on the whole population. This is not just like turning the lights out in a room. This is total darkness where there's no light whatsoever. And we've got to emphasize that, because I'm going to read Exodus 10 in just a moment, where the Bible says that it was so black, people could feel it. It's an ugly, ugly feeling, because darkness in Hebrew is the word choshech, and it refers to God's judgment on something. God's judgment causing massive pain, massive consternation. When God brings judgment, it's huge, it's worldwide, and it's related to things that humans can't do and can't be attributed to anything natural. Nothing natural. It's a fitting manner to do this. Makes all the nations round about tremble. They're all afraid. They don't know what's going on. And this is not the first time it happened. These judgments, these types of judgments bring what I like to call riveting attention on the events. It's like, whoa. You know, it's like it shakes you up to the point of, oh, what am I doing? What did I do? What's going on? It really wakes you up. And it changes your attitude towards things, because this is bigger than anybody. Bigger than anybody. Look what happened just before the Exodus. From Exodus 10, verses 21 to 23. And Jehovah said unto Moses, stretch out your hand toward heaven, that there may be darkness over the land of Egypt, even darkness which may be felt. And Moses stretched forth his hand towards heaven, and there was a thick darkness in all the land of Egypt. 3 days they saw not one another, neither rose any one from his place for 3 days. But all the children of Israel had light in their dwellings. You see, God brings his judgment upon an unbelieving world. And there's an example right there. The Jews were trusting God. Not one of them died in these judgments because they trusted God and they did what he said. To live outside the will of God, no matter how crafty you want to design your reasons, you're still living outside his will. I've heard so many people say, but you don't know my situation. I can't do what God says because, well, it's my situation. You just don't know it. God does. God does. God knows what we should be doing in our relationship to him. And when we pull away from him, there will be repercussions. It always happens. It always happens. He took light from the world at the time of Jesus' crucifixion. Matthew 27:45 says, now from the sixth hour there was darkness over all the land until the ninth hour. And in the last days of the church age, there will be one blackout just before the tribulation, and then there's going to be four during the tribulation. We see these described in Isaiah 13:10, Amos 8:9, Joel 3:15, Matthew 24:29, and Revelation 8:12. It just means that the light of the sun, the moon, the stars is suddenly blacked out so that the earth is not receiving any light from these sources. You know, there is now bombs available that when detonated over the earth, not on the earth, will take out all the electric systems everywhere. It produces a negative, if you will, electromagnetic field that ruins every electric system. It even lights in a car or a motorcycle or something. There's no light that will give. These things are available. They're talking about using those now. The day that is prophesied in Scripture is rapidly approaching us. The way things are going on this world, you know, there's a group of people meeting in Paris this week to decide what should they do with Israel. There's a couple of synagogues that were burned in Germany, and the court said, well, yeah, these guys shouldn't have done that, but we'll suspend their sentence. Folks, we're near the end. We are near the end. Things are getting worse and worse and worse. And it's so interesting that this group, the 70 nations, are coming together to decide what to do about Israel. What do you mean, what to do about Israel? Why is it any of your concern? This little teeny country is not even the size of New Jersey. It's surrounded by despotic nations that are run by tyrants. They all hate Israel. Why is that? Because it's God's people and it's Satan driving them. It is Satan driving them. The God of this age controls them. And he wants control. He's not given up. One of my seminary professors said, the reason that Satan keeps going, because he knows the end, is he just doesn't believe it. Because he's the father of lies to begin with. So people that lie all the time figure, well, everybody else is too, so I'm just not going to believe them. You see this in contract negotiations. Have you ever been in business negotiating contract? And you start seeing people want protection for things, and you go, my goodness, you want protection for that? Because that's what they do. They do these negative things, and they're trying to protect themselves from what they figure you'll do too, because they lie and cheat and steal, so you're going to too. God says, I will punish the world for their evil and the wicked for their iniquity, and I will cause the arrogancy of the proud to cease, and will lay low the haughtiness of the terrible. I'm going to close with verses 11 through 16 here, which starts talking about not the imagery of the crocodile and the people dying and the vultures coming and so on, but talking about who actually is going to do this, which has been brought out before, but it's a reaffirmation that I'm bringing the Babylonians in to do this. So the text reads, for thus saith the Lord Jehovah, the sword of the king of Babylon shall come upon thee. By the swords of the mighty will I cause thy multitude to fall. The terrible of the nations are they all. And they shall bring to naught the pride of Egypt, and all the multitude thereof shall be destroyed. I will destroy also the beast thereof from beside many waters. Neither shall the foot of man trouble them any more, nor the hoofs of beasts trouble them. Then will I make their waters clear and cause their rivers to run like oil, saith the Lord Jehovah. When I shall make the land of Egypt desolate and waste, a land destitute of what whereof it was full, when I shall smite all them that dwell therein, then shall they know that I am Jehovah. This is the lamentation wherewith they shall lament. The daughters of the nations shall lament therewith over Egypt, and over all her multitude shall they lament therewith, saith the Lord Jehovah. So the Babylonians are the means by which God is going to achieve this. He's going to cause the Egyptians to fall. He's used both Jeremiah and Ezekiel to warn them. Jeremiah in chapter 46, 26, and Ezekiel in chapter 21, 29, and here too. He's going to describe here, or he did describe, as he did in these other chapters through Jeremiah as well, that it was the king of Babylon that's going to bring the nation Egypt down. He's repeating it for emphasis. The majority of these passages just describe the desolations that's going to come about. And it says that the waterways are going to become quiet. Now, this final happening here, this final event, if you will, is going to cause them to be pushed out of the land for 40 years, and there's not even going to be any beasts there. And we've looked at this in the past. This is actually a prophecy about the beginning of the millennial kingdom. Because at the end of the tribulation, God is going to judge Egypt. And he's going to chase all the animals out, so they're not going to have any food even. They'll have to leave. They're going to disperse for 40 years in an exile. And then he says he's going to destroy all the beast. All the beast. So they're not going to have any food, as I've mentioned there, until the people return 40 years later. And then he says, then will I make their waters clear and cause their rivers to run like oil, saith the Lord Jehovah. He's going to restore their favor after a 40-year exile. He's not going to demolish them. There will be a country called Egypt in the Messianic Kingdom. You know, the same clear awareness of God is what he wants in all his judgments. Because he keeps saying, then you will know who I am. That's what he wants. He wants a relationship with the world's people. He wants them to acknowledge where they came from, who he is, and he wants people to follow him. One of the great teachers of the Bible, a Hebrew scholar, Charles Feinberg, he taught at Talbot Seminary in California for a long, long time. And one of my professors also was one of his students. And he said, Charles Feinberg, or Dr. Feinberg, he said, it was teaching through all these passages in the Old Testament. Finally, he says, look, it's real simple. Just do what he says. Just do what he says. Quit going off on your own path and trying to justify it. Just do what he says. If you want a relationship with God that's positive and you want things to go right in your life, do what God says. Don't fight him. Don't fight him. Now, this passage ends with a lamentation, just the same way it started, just the same way that Ezekiel has described this. We've seen other lamentations. The princes of the sea, from Ezekiel 26, we see prophet Ezekiel giving them himself in the 27th and the 28th chapter. And also in the 27th chapter, we see the mariners and the pilots of the sea in that section where he was describing the people in Phoenicia, Tyre, if you will, as a seafaring ship out in the Mediterranean. And here by the women of the nations. This is a lamentation, a wailing, a crying. And there's an ancient practice where they would hire women as professional mourners for different situations. And that's what God is saying here. You get these women that normally do, they get them to start wailing. This is going to be a real wailing effort here. This is not just going to be them being hired out and say, okay, where do we go and what do we do? They're going to feel it too. They're going to know exactly what it is. And God is bringing this judgment upon Egypt. And this judgment is going to go, as the long chronology of world events describes, into the tribulation and then for the first 40 years of the Messianic kingdom until God restores Egypt. Let's pray.